I'm Juan Manuel Benitez, sitting in for Brian Lehrer today. And the Supreme Court's new term gets underway today, and since Antonin Scalia's death earlier this year, the court is still one justice down and is often deadlocked on cases 4-4. That's affecting the kinds of cases the court will hear. The cases coming up could be seen as boring, or at least there are no major blockbusters on the docket, but my next guest says they're still interesting. Here with me now to talk about the cases and the politics behind the empty seat on the court is Ali Mistol, an editor for Above the Law and the legal editor for WNYC podcast More Perfect. Hi, Ellie. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, how are you doing? I'm so excited to be here.
Listeners, if you have any questions about the upcoming Supreme Court term, both about specific cases or the deadlock in the court and the political machinations behind it, you can give us a call at 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-WNYC. And Ali, before we get to the actual content of some of the cases the court is going to hear, let's talk about the makeup of the court. Since Scalia's death, the justices are deadlocked ideologically with 4 conservative and 4 liberal justices. President Obama nominated Merrick Garland to replace Scalia months ago, so what's going on with that?
Yeah, I mean, the situation with the court right now is that it's hobbled. It's a hobbled organization, and the Senate has done that to the court. I don't think that people fully understand the kind of potential lasting damage that is happening right now. Yes, we only have 8 justices, and yes, that's constitutionally permissible. But what the Senate has really done here is kind of exploit a loophole in our Constitution that allows them to not do their job. They say that after the election that they're going to appoint somebody. They're going to have a hearing on somebody. But I say, how do we know that that's true? Given what's happened, given and especially in a situation where the public is not going to punish the Senate at the polls for doing this, what's to make any future Senate approve the appointment of any nominee from an opposing president? There's no reason for them to ever actually appoint a 9th justice at this point.
And that's my next question, because the Senate refuses to confirm President Obama's appointee. What will happen if Hillary Clinton is our next president? Would she have better luck getting a justice confirmed?
They say, I mean, if the Republicans hold the Senate and Hillary Clinton wins the White House, they say that they'll do something about it. But I don't know that to be true. Why would I trust them at this point? Look, I think that if Hillary wins and the Republicans keep the Senate, Merrick Garland is likely to be kind of approved in the lame duck session. I think the Senate will feel like they'll have a better that Merrick Garland is more centrist than other people that Hillary might appoint. If the Democrats win the Senate and Hillary wins, I think that Obama might even pull back Merrick and let Hillary appoint a more liberal, younger justice. I think that's a definite possibility. And if Trump wins and the Republicans hold on the Senate, I mean, Judge Judy, I mean, who knows? Look, he's put out a list, right? Trump has put out a list, a very conservative, good government list of potential Supreme Court justices, and the people on his list are fine jurists. The issue is that I don't understand a voter who would actually trust Trump to pick from that list, given that he so far hasn't shown a whole lot of reason to kind of keep with his previous statements, right? So if Trump gets in and the Republicans are in control of the Senate, honestly, who knows what kind of person he will appoint? I think the only thing that we can know is that whoever a Trump administration appoints, that justice will have to swear fealty to the executive office, right?
And this is a really important issue for many voters this year. We speak to a lot of voters right now, a lot of Republican voters that might not be really happy with the Republican and candidate for president with Donald Trump, but they refused to get on the Hillary Clinton wagon just because they say that the Supreme Court balance is at stake and they don't want to have some sort of like a progressive justice that could bring a liberal majority and the social change that could bring over the next few years.
I do think it's a really important issue on the right. I do think that it's one of the ways that the Republican establishment is becoming comfortable with Trump based on the Supreme Court. But I don't see it on the left, which is shocking to me. Mm-hmm. What you don't see on the left is the same kind of ideological concern about the Supreme Court, especially with millennials. I mean, if you kind of go down the list of the things that millennials say they care about, 60-70% of that stuff happens at the court level, and yet they don't seem to be particularly concerned about the court, mm-hmm. and instead you get all this kind of third-party protest vote kind of stuff. And I'm like, well, if you think that your vote should matter and your vote is so important to you that you have to vote your conscience and vote mm-hmm. third-party, one or two Supreme Court justices can upend voting rights mm-hmm. in the country. And if that doesn't get you out to the polls, and if that doesn't get you excited to vote for a person who's going to appoint justices to protect voting rights, then I don't know what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Well, millennials, Generation X's, or baby boomers, if you're listening and right now and we want to hear your opinion, is this issue a really important issue deciding your vote this November? Do you really care about the direction the Supreme Court could take in the next few years? You can call us at 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-WNYC. And it's really interesting that the new cases this year, at least at first glance, they don't seem as controversial or huge blockbusters like the ones that we've seen in the past few years.
Right. The court has gone out of its way, I think, this term to avoid really hot button social ideological issues. Now, there's an argument that that's a good thing. Right, there's an argument, and to kind of be fair to the conservative side here, conservatives for two generations have been kind of begging the court to take a step back and not insert itself into social political issues as much. And by hobbling the court in this way, they're kind of getting what they want, because the court has, in a certain way, pulled back from the real kind of, you know, the things that we're going to scream about in prime time. However, look, the court always takes important cases. The court only takes interesting cases. And there's stuff going on this term that, from a kind of legal and social perspective, are important. The way that I view the docket is that I see a lot of things that are going to be 8-0, and I see a lot of things that are going to be 4-4. But that doesn't mean that kind of when people say the docket is boring, sure, but it's still super important.
We're going to hear from Melanie in New Rochelle. Melanie, thank you for calling the Brian Lehrer Show. Tell us, what do you think?
Well, I think, and let me just preface this by saying, I believe that we, my generation, Generation X, I'm in my 40s, we're the ones that raise these people, okay? So, I mean, with a lot of issues with them, we forget we raise them. So I have nieces, nephews. I don't have any children, but I have a lot of family members that are millennials. And I just, quite frankly, don't think they know. I don't think they understand. I don't think they get it. I mean, I love my millennials, but they are clueless. And so there's an education in my mind that needs to occur. And I do see Hillary's campaign and her surrogates and Michelle Obama and people sort of dummying this down. I'm not trying to say they're dummies, but they certainly aren't political wizards, and they're not where I was when I was that age. They're not as mature mm-hmm. in many ways, and politics is just one more way that they don't know what the heck is going on, and it's annoying. But I do see Hillary's campaign going out there and actually speaking to this now, and I hear Bernie Sanders. And mm-hmm. so I think it's becoming more clear. We don't have an awful lot of time, but I think that they're making some inroads. Even today I saw a millennial that I know posting uh-huh. something on Facebook.
Thank you, millennial. Thank you very much.
Well, and part of this, right, is actually the court's fault, right? The court enjoys operating in secret, right? I mean, one of the reasons why WNYC has this podcast that I'm part of, More Perfect, is to try to bring transparency to what the court is actually doing, right? The court enjoys people not knowing what's going on unless you've been through 3 years of law school and what have you, right? So part of it is the court's fault. But you know what I think is worth pointing out? There is one person in this country that could have stopped what the Senate is doing and stood up for a full Supreme Court. And that person is John Roberts, the Chief Justice of the court, and he dropped the ball. I mean, John Roberts has been, I think, a very fair justice. He's been one who cares about unity. But here was an opportunity for Roberts to rise above the petty partisan politics and say, look, we're an independent institution. We need 9 members to work correctly. Give us the 9th member and stop playing footsie with this stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And I think John Roberts didn't rise to that occasion. And I think historically, and Roberts is a person that cares about his history and the legacy of the court. I think historically this will go down as a red mark in Roberts's ledger.
Let's hear from Lori in northwestern New Jersey. Lori, welcome to the Brian Lehrer Show.
Welcome. Thank you.
Tell us, what do you think?
Well, I think this is a crucial issue, this election. And I have a daughter, and I'm very concerned for her future, for women's rights, and also choice, a woman's right to choose. And it actually has devastated me that they have let this go so long. And as far as millennials go, I don't think they're uneducated. I think their concerns are a little different, and they're angry. They're very angry because they look at our system, and they were all in for Obama. And they feel like they were betrayed in some way because that change didn't happen quickly enough for them.
Okay.
Makes any sense to you,
that's a fair point. I'm almost 40, and I have this fight on Facebook almost every day. And one of the things I say to them is, look at what you got from Obama. Go read Sotomayor's dissent in Utah v. Strafe, where she just tears down the way the criminal justice system works. That's what you got with your Obama vote, right? You got Sotomayor and Kagan, two people who are going to be on the side of criminal justice reform for decades in the future. And now it's time to fill this seat that tragically came open. And, you know, I can disagree with Scalia all I want, but, you know, you don't. Don't want the man to die, right? Unexpectedly and unfortunately, right? But here now is an opportunity to really change the direction of the court one way or the other, and the other way is here for the fight. Right? Again, like I said before, the right is here for the fight. They know what's at stake here. You have to, if you're not going to meet that fire with some more fire, again, you're kind of missing the point.
Let's hear from Anthony in New Brunswick. Anthony, welcome to the Brian Lehrer Show. Are you a millennial?
Yes, I am. I am 30 years old. So that puts me right at the edge of being a millennial.
Okay, and tell us, what do you think about this issue?
I think that it's absolutely ridiculous to say that my third-party vote does not count in this election cycle, and I'll give you a few reasons why it does count. So, number one, I live in New Jersey. So if I vote for anybody except Hillary Clinton, my vote does not count because of our electoral college. So if I vote for Trump, which I am a conservative voter, so that would be my, you know, lean is to vote for Trump, my vote would not count anyway because New Jersey's going to vote for Hillary Clinton because we're a Democratic state. So if I vote for Gary Johnson, who I am going to vote for, if he gets 7% of the popular vote this election, then the Libertarian Party next election cycle will have federal funding for the presidential election, and it will have the party will have a fighting chance at getting somebody elected for the presidency. And we will have a legitimate third party in America. And that's what my vote is for. Mm-hmm. So my vote will really, really count if I vote for Johnson. And it won't at all count if I vote for Trump. So And I understand the implications of the Supreme Court. I understand whoever is elected president this election will get like three kicks on the Supreme Court and completely change the social makeup of the Supreme Court. But I can't do anything about that. And even if Trump is the president, he's probably going to do some craziness anyway, and not, you know, appoint people that I would like to see on the Supreme Court. So this is just an incredible anomaly. But I can tell you right now that my third party vote definitely counts, especially from New Jersey.
Thank you, Anthony. That's a valid argument.
Yeah, I mean, I think what you have is and I guess what I find frustrating is people who say my vote's not gonna count, so it's gonna really count if I vote for somebody who's definitely not gonna win, right? There's a logical jump there that I find difficult to make. If you are a Trump supporter and you're living in New Jersey is kind of a state. I mean, you look, we're getting very used to a map that looks a certain way right now, but you know. One of Trump's chief surrogates is the governor of New Jersey. So don't tell me that a Republican can't win New Jersey, right? Like, that's just not accurate. So that's one thing. The second thing is the sense of like, oh, but I can't change what's going to happen on the court. Well, this is where I started with the Senate. If you want to have a voice on how the court's going to fold, what we've seen in stark relief is how important the Senate is. And so if you don't even – so whatever you're going to do on the presidential side, even if you don't feel like maybe you can affect the outcome – and by the way, why should we think that any one person should affect the outcome of the entire country? But certainly the tacit acceptance of what the Senate has done is just going to empower them to do more. And not just on the Republican side, right? What do you think the Democrats are going to do whenever they get back to the majority and an opposition president comes along, right?
Ellie, so we need to talk about...
Yeah, the actual docket.
The docket. Tell us like three most important cases in the docket.
I got three for you. The most interesting social one to me is called Peña Rodriguez versus Colorado. This is a man, he was charged with a felony and two misdemeanors, kind of aggravated assault of a woman, what have you. He was convicted, the jury deadlocked on the top count, but then convicted him on the misdemeanor charges. After the deliberations, the jurors came out and said that one juror who was a former law enforcement officer said, and I quote, "I think he did it because he's Mexican, and Mexican men take whatever they want." He also said that in his time on the force, he used to patrol areas, and 9 out of 10 times, it was Mexican men being guilty of being aggressive towards women and young girls. This, the jurors said, poisoned the jury room. And in normal circumstances, this would be a slam dunk Sixth Amendment case for the guy to overturn his conviction because he didn't have a fair trial under the Sixth Amendment. But jury deliberations are supposed to be secret. And so the question in front of the court is whether or not they can kind of ruin the privacy of the jury in order to overturn what was clearly kind of a bad conviction. I don't know how that's going to go. I could see that going lots of different ways. Ginsburg, for instance, has been very strong about how important jury secrecy needs to be. Sotomayor, on the other hand, has suggested that there are some times, and this would seem like one of them, where the fault is so egregious that it's worth it to break the sanctity of jury selection. So I think, I mean, by acclamation, I think that's going to be a really interesting social case, and I don't know what's going to happen.
Number two.
The other two, the two and three are on the same thing. It's the patent and trademark stuff, right? So I think a lot of news was made last week when the court agreed to hear Lee versus Tam. This is a trademark case about whether or not you can register a disparaging trademark. Tam is the frontman for the group The Slants. It's an Asian American group. People are saying that that's offensive. Tam is saying like, no, I'm clearly being ironic. Why are you being so stupid? But the large implication here is kind of goes directly to the football team in Washington, which wants to trademark their arguably offensive name. And so the question is whether or not it's constitutional for the U.S. government to ban the registration of offensive trademarks. So that'll be a something. And then the last one that you're going to definitely want to talk about with your family over Thanksgiving is Apple v. Samsung. As you know, Apple destroyed Samsung in a big patent litigation back in the day. They won a lot of money for Samsung. Samsung's arguing in front of the court that their design patent shouldn't be Apple's design patent shouldn't be enforced. So not just like how the iPhone works, but like the edges of the iPhone, the iPhone as a fashion accessory shouldn't be patentable by Apple. That's what Samsung's saying, and I don't know what the court's going to say.
And really quickly, Ellie, do you think that we'll see a Clinton v. Trump case before the end of the year?
Oh, God, no. I don't think it's going to be. No. We're going to have a winner.
And it happened in the year 2000. If it happens this year, it will be more complicated to resolve.
Yeah, because this court is – yeah, no. Don't even – we're going to know on November 9th.
Okay, we'll have to leave it there for today. My guest has been Ellie Mistol, an editor for Above the Law and the legal editor for WNYC podcast More Perfect. Ellie, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, man.